This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 207 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
In this episode, we bring you two special interviews. First, I recently had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Floyd Busby, a gentleman with the Caledonian Club of San Francisco, the largest sponsoring organization of the Scottish Highland Gathering and Games in Pleasanton, California. We discuss the history of the games, as well as this year's very special Outlander guest, Graham McTavish.
A huge Outlander podcast welcome to Floyd Busby. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us and our wonderful upcoming Scottish Gathering Games.
Oh, we would not miss it. I don't think we've missed one in the last... We may have missed one because of travel, but I don't think we've missed one definitely since the show started. We have not missed one. So much fun. We have a very specific reason why we're talking and why we're, you know, we brought you on this year. We had a really short and sweet interview, like I think it was in 2013, the first year of our podcast, maybe 2014, just talking about the games. It was like on site. We were there. And that was, I think, when we first met. So this is definitely going to be more than just a few minutes, but we have a very specific reason that our listener will find out why we are chatting. Floyd, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you're connected with the Scottish Highland Gathering and Games in Pleasanton.
Oh, all right. I actually got involved with the games about 25 years ago when they were still up in Santa Rosa. I was asked to produce their printed program, which I did up until, last issue last year. Since then, I also started doing the advertising, the promotion, that sort of thing for the games. I handle all the things like signage on the roads, and I'm a graphics designer by trade, so I do all of the display ads you may see in newspapers, that sort of thing. And so that's how I got involved, actually through Past Chief David Scott. His son, David Jr., was going to do the program, and this is like around 25 years ago, and decided that he didn't have the experience at that point in time, so he asked me to do it, and that's how I got involved. Now, my own roots, I am Scottish, but a number of generations back. That's about it.
So now that you've told us a little bit about yourself and your connection with the games, what exactly is a gathering in games, and what can someone who has never attended one expect?
Well, if you are interested in coming to our games, you'll find it to be one of the very largest in all the world. The Gathering Games initially, and in the case of our games, which is put on by the Caledonian Club of San Francisco, in 1866, in San Francisco, at the intersection of Market and 12th Street, was a park, and they had more, the club had just organized, and they had more like a social, almost like a picnic, but within that they had a number of athletic events and other typically Scottish events. They did that for 2 years there. Then they moved to Sausalito, where they put on the their games, and the games at that point had grown and become much more organized as a gathering and games. And in fact, the town of Sausalito has a street named after it called Caledonia Street. From there, they expanded just over the years. Of course, you know, this will be our 152nd games coming up this September 2nd and 3rd. And it's a long, long history. During this, the games never missed a year. The great earthquake of 2006, 06. It didn't deter the games. We still had them. And so it's been an ongoing games. We're the third oldest in the United States. The first two that were prior to ours only by a year or two were on the East Coast. So we're the oldest, you might say, west of the Mississippi. Hopefully we've learned how to do it fairly well. We are the largest. The Alameda County Fairgrounds in Pleasanton, where we hold our games, is the second largest fairgrounds in California, the largest being in Pomona, Southern California. We basically use all of the fairgrounds, including the Mile Horse Track, where we have Kilted Mile, a run of the Mile Track. But more firmly than that, we use that area for a number of events, including both afternoons, the masked bands. And that's where all of the bands that participate, the bands being grade 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, come to, and they have been competing during the day individually for individual scoring and competition in their own class. But in the afternoon, they come marching in waves with a drum major. That's the person with the, that leads. And they come in waves in front of the grandstand. So as a spectator sitting on the grandstand, you look forward. You're looking far to your right and far to your left because it's just a huge, huge wave of pipers and drummers. Somewhere in the neighborhood,
oh, wow,
of 850 pipers and drummers. They put on a concert. Also,
oh,
every
gosh,
year we have a U.S. Marine Band. This year, as in the past several years, it's the Marine Band out of Southern California. It's the first Air Wing Band out of Southern California. And they march in unison with the L.A. Scots. The L.A. Scots is one of the world's top grade one pipe bands. They intermix, march, and play, and we're basically the only games in the world that uses a U.S. military band and a grade one or military pipe band that way. So it's quite a spectacle, and we urge people who attend our games to attend this closing ceremonies that starts around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It goes for a couple of hours.
Now, is that both days or is that just Sunday?
Saturday and Sunday, both days.
Oh, nice. There's quite a history. You've described quite a history and also very sizable. From what I understand, and I've just done a tiny bit of research, it is or can be, as you said, the biggest games in the world, and it kind of plays back and forth with Grandfather Mountain on the East Coast. Is that right?
Yes. My information is that probably about 7 or 8 years ago, some people representing the Grandfather Mountain came out to our games. I didn't meet them myself, but my understanding is that among themselves, they decided our games, even back that a few years back, was the largest.
Wow.
Now, you can look at that several ways. For instance, this year we should have 45 bands. We'll have 38 to 45 bands. In North America, there's only one other event that has more pipe bands. That's in Canada, and that's an event specifically for pipe bands to compete against each other. But those aren't full-fledged games such as ours. So as a full-fledged gathering games, we basically have more pipe bands than any in the world.
You've done quite a job on describing the history and its size and how that can be defined. What else besides pipe bands? Obviously, there are some great closing ceremonies. There are pipe bands. It's a really large space that is filled and different kinds of events. So you mentioned something like the Kilted Mile. So there are some athletics involved.
Well, there's absolutely athletics. This year will be the 43rd U.S. Invitational Championship. Some years we have the World Championship. This year it happens we do not have the World, but we have the U.S. We have the top athletes in the world. Everything from the pros, the professionals, to the amateurs, both men's and women's divisions. Overall, about 72 athletes who specialize in heavy events. Heavy events is comprised of 8 different disciplines. Each athlete has to compete in all 8 of them, unlike normal track and field, where if you're a pole vaulter, that's all you do, or a shot putter, that's all you do. In our games, each athlete has to do all 8. Naturally, each athlete has their specialty, the one that they feel the most competent in, but they have to go through all 3. So you have individual winners, and you have class winners, and it's really quite remarkable to see. And of course, most people, when they think of Scottish Games, think of that long pole, telephone pole, tree trunk, which in reality is called a caber. And we have the biggest, meanest caber in the world that the pros use. But the different classes use slightly lighter, shorter cabers. For instance, the women's class and other amateur classes don't use a caber quite as long and as heavy as the one used by the professionals. So that is kind of the glamour part of the heavy events. And the way we do it, 6 of the 8 events are held in the morning over at the athletic field there at the fairgrounds. In the afternoon, right after the lunch period, the weight for height and the caber is produced in front of the grandstand. So the grandstand people, get to see those events at that point. And the weight for height that I mentioned is a 56-pound weight with a flexible ring. And the athlete swings it between the legs up and down until they get to the point where they can throw it. And there's a crossbar, such as a pole vault crossbar, and they throw it up over the bar. And the bar is raised incrementally, as the athletes participate in it, until they finally it's too high for them to make it, and the winners are decided that way. We also have, of course, Highland Dancing Championships. We also have Irish Step Dancing Demonstrations. We have 5 buildings of vendors. So if you want to spend a little bit of money, you can certainly do that with all types of imports from Great Britain and also imports from down under, New Zealand and Australia that have very close ties to Scotland. Entertainment, of course, is one of the biggest ventures. Mm. We have 5 stages of traditional and Celtic rock. We have 2 stages of what we call Celtic heritage. So a person going to our games, if they're into the entertainment, could spend all day just sitting at different stages and watching these either individuals or groups, everything from your traditional to, as I mentioned, Celtic rock. Celtic rock is kind of its own venture. We'll have Albina. Albina is from Scotland. They come over most every year. Albina is what we call tribal. It's all percussion and 1 bagpipe. And it's very dramatic. We have local Tempest out of Oakland that's been with us almost every year. They're very popular. Brother is from Australia. We'll have Brother. And we have the Brown sisters with George Cavanaugh, Michael Mullen, Ed Miller, very well known, Peter Daldry, the Golden Baw, and the Fire among the various stage presentations. Celtic heritage is we have the Fiddler's Rally with one of the world's top fiddlers, Alastair Fraser. We have Harper's Bazaar. This is all harps. Valin Schumer. Dancing, almost like folk dancing, but it's Scottish country dancing. and on. So if a person is the type that likes to sit down and watch, be entertained, they certainly have the different venues which to enjoy their day. That's one reason that we also have two-day tickets, because in reality, you can't really see everything and do everything in one day, you know, if you're going to spend any time with a favorite venue. That pretty well covers the main things. There's so many other things. Glen of the Clans. That's where the clans get together. And we usually have about 100 clans represented. And so if the folks who are attending aren't 100% sure if they have any Scotch in them or not, they can walk around there and find out. Each clan has what's called a step. And what that is, it's the names that follow under a particular Scottish name. Let's take MacDonald, for instance, as a typical Scottish. Under MacDonald, there's probably 20 to 30 names that reach up and are under the banner, you might say, of Clan MacDonald. And this is through centuries of marriages and so on and so forth, where a person that's name isn't MacDonald, but marries in a MacDonald family, you know, maybe two centuries ago or whatever. So it's amazing how many people walk around and look there and find that they have a very distinct avenue to a particular Scottish name. Very popular is the Irish Pavilion with Irish step dancing, because the Scots feel very close akin to the Irish.
So it sounds like there is a ton of entertainment, whether it's music or the athletics or the pipers, and all the way around, and of course history, and also of course when someone goes out, for more than a few hours, they will need sustenance, and there are plenty of places to get things to eat as well as to do a wee whiskey tasting. Is that right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the whiskey taste is very, very popular. When it first started, when we were first approached, there's a little behind-the-scenes story here. When we were first approached by the people that put them on, and they put them on all over the world, they asked, you know, if they'd like to put on this whiskey tasting. And we said, yeah, that's fine. But we didn't expect anything major to come out of that. And right off the bat, it was popular. It's one of the most popular venues. I guess a few people like their scotch. And food, we have a number of vendors that sell British or Scottish-like food, like meat pies, bangers, and the various items of that nature. Now, also, for those people who are attending that maybe don't really want to get into the ethnic foods of that nature, they also have the typical fairgrounds food that you would find at the county fair, you know, a hot dog on a stick and all the various Americanized types of foods. Let's see. I didn't mention the Children's Glen. For the wee ones, this is where they can go in and play little games and win little prizes. And it's a lot of fun for them. And Children's Glen, by the way, is sponsored by Scott Haggerty, who is a supervisor for the Alameda County. And ever since we've been there, he's the one that sponsors that. Sheepdog Trials. This is put on by a professional organization that deals in sheepdog trials, that being a handler, a sheepdog, and a bunch of sheep, and showing how the handler controls the dog who herds sheep into a pen, for instance, which is the type of demonstration that's shown. And it's really quite fascinating if you've never seen that before. We have tournaments also, five-a-side soccer tournament. This is eight semi-pro teams that compete against each other, go down, and you finally on Sunday have an overall winner. and it's really fascinating, very fast soccer, you know, with only five members on a team. We also have rugby and shinty tournament. Shinty is a stick and ball type of hockey, field hockey, in a way, that was invented in ancient Scotland. Let's see. We have a display of British automobiles and motorcycles. We have archery participation. Very, very popular one, especially with the kids. Well, adults too, is the birds of prey. And here you'll find falconry, owls, things of that nature. Usually we have about 20 to 25 birds on display. And at various periods, handlers will get up and speak about their particular type of bird, be it a certain type of falcon or whatever, and about, you know, their habitat, et cetera, et cetera. And it goes on and on. There's something for everybody. And what I like to emphasize is you do not have to be Scottish to enjoy the Scottish Games. You really don't. There's something there for everybody. 22 different events and attractions.
I agree with that. I've been to numerous. Summer and I have both been to numerous, and there's so much. Even at the, I don't know if there is an average games and gathering, but there's so much that can interest, I think, anyone.
Yes, as I mentioned, you don't have to be Scottish to enjoy it. There's so much. May I mention our website? Your listeners who may want to attend the games and aren't familiar with how to do so, of course, you can buy tickets at the gate. But prior to about 2 weeks before the games, if you do it by phone or on the internet, there is a discount. And our website is www.thescottishgames.com. Quite simple. Thescottishgames.com. And I would ask people interested to go to that website, and you'll also get more information on the games and what's coming up. Which reminds me of, I don't believe I mentioned our special guest, Graham McTavish.
No, absolutely not. And I was just going to get there. So you told us a tremendous amount about this game and how anyone should be able to enjoy these games. Can you tell us what might be specifically interesting or drawing for Outlander fans?
Well, certainly it would be Graham McTavish, who played the war chieftain of Clan Mackenzie. Graham, of course, is a very notable actor in his own right. Other than that, he's been in the, for years, Rambo movies and so on. He's done acting in both motion pictures and TV series, and we're certainly thrilled to have him. Of course, the Outlander fans know that in the last episode that we've had the privilege of viewing, he got killed off by Jamie. But with a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I was thinking about bringing him in a casket, and he pops out and says, "Hi, I'm actually alive." But I don't think we'll do it that way. And he will be, of course, available during both the Saturday and Sunday games at different times to sign autographs. And we'll have, you can bring your own item for him to autograph. But we will have placards, you know, with his depiction and so on, free of charge, that he can sign for you. So we're really looking forward to that. The times of the autograph sessions will be posted at the clock tower, which is the information booth, and other areas around the fairgrounds, so that you won't miss meeting Graham McTavish.
Absolutely not, and we will be there with bells on. So you mentioned the website and how there is a discount if they get tickets, if someone signs up to get tickets up to 2 weeks before the games. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us? If they go to the website, can they also do reading about the games and all the different things you've discussed?
Yes. There are several little films and so on showing past games, and they get all the information they need. I hope that they will go to the website and find out more about the games. I didn't mention is Living History. Mm-hmm. Living History is with Mary, Queen of Scots, and her royal entourage, along with the Highland warriors that protect her. And this is a depiction of her in moving caravans, going from one spot to another. So it's like a mobile unit in ancient times, in the 1700s. With them is the, not with them, but shown are the a Roman legion garrison, because of course the Romans invaded Britain, and also the invading Vikings, which also for 100 years held part of Britain. So it's a very interesting, a very large area with their encampments and processions and so on and so forth, and it's a very entertaining and also a way of learning some of the historical facts. They do a beautiful job with that.
One final, hopefully quick question. If someone's never been and they listen to this and they say, you know what, I want to go. Besides, you know, we talked about getting tickets and that kind of thing and checking out some more information on the website. Do you have any tips or hints or advice on making this the best games ever as an attendee?
Oh, well, I don't know. All of the games are the best ever, aren't they?
Good answer.
Yeah, no, from year to year, there's really not a lot of changes other than the fact that we have Graham McTavish as a guest this year. Mm-hmm. I think I can't really answer that question fully, but I might mention people who are in the Greater Bay Area can take BART to Dublin and to the very last station, and there will be a shuttle bus that runs between the station and the fairgrounds.
That'd be awesome if we had access to BART here. So that's thank you for that tip.
Yeah, and it saves, you know, parking and all like that, and the walk.
Yeah.
They're dropped off basically at there's three entrances to the fairgrounds, and they're dropped off at one of those entrances. So it's not a long trek from the parking lot to the gate. So it's very convenient.
Thank you again so much for spending some of your valuable Saturday morning time with us.
And may I answer one other thing?
Of course.
May I insert something that I forgot about? There is a raffle, and the raffle is both Saturday and Sunday, so there's two winners, and it's a trip for two to anywhere that the airline, Aer Lingus, which is the Irish airline, which I've been on, very good, fine airline, anywhere that they travel all over the United Kingdom and so on. And so it's a trip for two, and there'll be a drawing for a winner on Saturday and another drawing for a winner on Sunday. So I just want to mention that because a lot of people like raffles. So, and they might get a nice trip for two to Scotland or Ireland or England, wherever they'd like to go.
So thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to share this with listeners. And I think it's going to be a pretty awesome game. They're always awesome, but I think with Graham, it's going to be amazing for Outlander fans.
Well, I know that anybody that perhaps hasn't been in the past, if they go, I can guarantee that it will be a day very worth their while. And I want to thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. You guys know, anytime, absolutely. We are very happy to help promote the games because it's an important part of cultural history, and it's a darn fun, good time. And you get people like Graham, so you never know.
Right. Well, we'll see you at the games.
Okay, we'll see you then. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Next up, my interview with author David J. Scott. David is part of the American Friends of Erskine, a not-for-profit, tax-exempt organization run by a group of U.S. citizen volunteers who are proud of Scotland's military heritage and keen to show their support for Scottish veterans.
So how are you this morning?
I'm fine. We were out a little late last night, Floyd and I and our wives.
Thank you so much again for that beautiful, beautiful purple volume that you provided me with at the Motherlode Games. I love going through and looking at the profiles of people who have served, as well as people who served and have been served by Erskine. It's really a testament to what they do.
Yeah, it's a great story. Of course, they're just over 100 years old now. That 1916 was the beginning. And as you could tell by that book, the country, well, America wasn't in yet, I don't think, but the country, Europe, was in turmoil, and there was a big war going on, the First World War from 1914 to 1916. And 1918. And so right in the middle in 1916, all these Scottish guys were drifting back home, mangled and, you know, disfigured and, you know, terribly traumatized by the killing that was going on. And people took notice and said, we've got to help these people. And so to start a project like that, and I think even today it's possible, you need to have royal patronage. Somebody at the palace has to say, I'll get behind that. And as soon as you get a royal patronage, everything opens up. People start donating and sponsoring and stuff like that. So Queen Victoria's daughter, one of her daughters, Princess Louise, agreed to do the patronage part of it. And Erskine was born in 1916. And it just went on and on from there and still going strong.
Let's take us back to how we first met. Summer and I were, I think, at the 2013 Pleasanton Highland Scottish Games and Gathering.
Yeah.
And we were walking by and saw this booth. And I don't know why we stopped. I mean, I think I stopped just to kind of find out what it was. And it was a booth, a tent, that was called the American Friends of Erskine. And that's where we first met yourself and Floyd.
Correct.
So how did you, you've discussed a little bit about, of course, Erskine and its beginnings. How did you become, and you yourself are a Scot, how did you become involved with or first become aware of Erskine, and then how did the American Friends of Erskine kind of form from that, or how were you a part of that, or were you?
Well, it was pretty interesting because, you know, of course, I was born a long time ago, but... And I knew of Erskine. I grew up with Erskine. I knew about their fundraising and stuff like that. They went on in Scotland. And I knew where the facility was, but I had never visited it, ever. But it came about through a gentleman called James Barron back in 2010. When I was the chief of the Caledonian Club, I got a call from James Barron, who is, incidentally, was the head of another non-profit called Friends of Scotland. And he's also the business manager for Sir Sean Connery. Anything that happens for Sean Connery in America, James Barron handles it. So he knew me and he called me and said, I know you go to Europe every year to the motorcycle races on the Isle of Man. And I guess you stop in Glasgow to visit relatives. And I said, yes, I do. He said, we've become friendly with an organization called Erskine. And, of course, I knew exactly who they were. And he said, Erskine would like to talk to you, if it's possible, when you're in Glasgow. Could you go over there and say hello and listen to what they have to say? And I said, fine. Yeah, no problem. Have them pick me up at my address. And so they picked me up, took me over to Erskine, which is quite an operation. It really is spectacular when you actually see it. So I sat down with the chief executive officer and two of his directors, and they gave me a pitch about what would it take for us to come to the Scottish Games in Pleasanton. We've heard so much about it that it would be a wonderful opportunity for our American branch, which is called American Friends of Erskine. And we would like to come there, introduce ourselves, and be, you know, be the first to say, you know, we're here on the West Coast. And said, well, I said, as the chief, I cannot give you a yes right now, but I can go back and I will present it to the board or to our officer corps, and I'll recommend it. So let's take it from there. And, of course, I went to the Isle of Man for the motorcycle races, came back to San Francisco, presented the story to the membership and the officers, and they accepted it. So in 2010, the very first appearance of Erskine, American Friends of Erskine, took place at Pleasanton. And that's basically in a nutshell.
And we've discussed this offline a few times at the different opportunities we've had to speak at games. What American Friends of Erskine does at the games is they provide the American face of the organization as far as people finding out information about it. And they also provide the opportunity for games goers, attendees, to donate to this cause, to this place. If someone wanted to donate, what exactly, obviously the money goes to Erskine. How do they help? How does this money go to help?
Okay. It kicked off as a very young effort, you know, with a couple of people flying in from Erskine with merchandise and stuff, attractive little trinkets and stuff that we don't actually sell. People look at them and say, how much is this? And we'll say, well, what do you think's fair? And, you know, if we were selling, we'd probably look for, you know, $10 or $5. But the spirit of the thing is this, and it was a winner for me to convince me that I wanted to be involved was the first obstacle for Erskine. But when you think of all the Scottish people in this country, or people who simply like Scottish things, or, you know, are attracted to men in kilts, if you like, or Outlander. Take Outlander. Look how that's taken. So
yeah.
It was a no-brainer for me to say, well, when I talk to people and I say, hello, are you here for the weekend for the games, and are you Scottish? Would you feel inclined to donate something to help some people back in Scotland who are less fortunate than you that fought wars? And so it goes on like that. It's very easy. And so I knew we could tap into these people who live here, either this generation or the relatives came a long time ago. Either way, they're pretty easy to get help from. The concept of making money and just sending it back to Scotland was not good for me. So we came up with the idea that let's do something that is visible and long-term, long-lasting. And so we came up with the idea of they've got five little buses over there that they use for day trips to the Scottish Highlands and Loch Lomond and places like that, and the Edinburgh Festival tattoo. And so I looked at the fleet they had, five, and they're all beaten up and badly worn out. So I said, let's buy a bus. We'll raise the money. I asked Erskine to find out how much it would take in UK in money, in pounds, and they came up with the guy who ran the fleet. Obviously, when you ask a guy, design something that you would like, and so he came up with a design of a 16-passenger diesel bus that would be converted to help the handicapped people. And so the price was £46,800 last year. That calculated out in dollars to $70,000. So we said, okay, I would rather have a target. So that was the target, to buy a bus. Well, we did. We bought that bus.
Wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
And we delivered it. I went over there and delivered it.
Oh, my God.
And handed over the keys. And it was quite an event because I thought it would just be simple, but they had everybody from Volkswagen, the manufacturers, to the company in Northern Ireland who converted the bus, and all the newspapers and all the dignitaries. So it was quite an event.
Oh, so this is much more than just people, out of the goodness of their heart, donating. That is the crux of it. But they're not just saying, oh, you know, give money to help out these people. I mean, yes, they are helping, but this is a truly international thing.
Yeah. We of course, when the word got out in the UK that this American bunch had bought them a $70,000 bus, I mean, the British Legion over there and all the other charities said, hey, what the hell's going on?
Oh my gosh.
So we are now halfway to another bus. We've got over $26,000 in the bank. And for this year, we're going to buy another bus. This time, we're going to put it in Edinburgh. There's an Erskine military establishment in Edinburgh. So we've got a bus in Glasgow, which is driving around all over the west of Scotland. And our logos are on there, the Caledonian Club and American Friends of Erskine. So
nice.
The Edinburgh people on the East Coast will get to see this bus driving around. And we haven't finished quite who's going to be the primary logo. American Friends of Erskine is on there, but we're not doing another Caledonian Club of San Francisco unless they want to, you know, pick up the balance and make it possible.
Yeah.
But I think it's looking like maybe St. Andrew's Society of San Francisco might be a player there. But the bus, this is the greatest thing about this. The bus life expectancy is 8 years. It's a brand new Volkswagen diesel, very commercial engine. But for 8 years, it's going to run around there. So what a deal for somebody who wants to have their name plastered on a bus in Scotland. Huh? For 8 years. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So last year, or middle to end of last year, up until even now, the exchange rate has gone down a bit. Will someone that, therefore, could you say, and until it goes up, which it can do at any time, that an American donating $1, that money is actually going further than it did in years past?
Yeah. I often meet some negativity. Obviously, some people say, well, it's like the Wounded Warriors, you know, you guys are just having a big party with the money. And I said, you know, on the contrary, we are not. Every cent we make is voluntary. I've got no expenses. Mm-hmm. I buy my own fuel. I pay my own telephone bills. There's nothing gets charged to American Friends. It all goes into the project. And as you mentioned, the exchange rate this year is so much more favorable that bus will now cost $60,000 instead of $70,000. You know, the pound is the pound. At 46,800 last year, it's still 46,800 this year. But if I send a check there, it will be 10,000 less than we required last year. Yeah. So we're rolling, and, you know, the Scottish Games at Pleasanton is the main source of income for the year. We make a tremendous effort there. I have the Sea Cadets based on the aircraft carrier USS Hornet in Oakland. They all come to the games to do their little thing. But then I've more or less got them all with a purple bucket, and, you know, there'll be 30 of them walking around and in amongst the people in the grandstand getting donations. So we do really well at the Pleasanton Games. And that's why that first bus carries the Caledonian Club logo, because they've been good enough to allow us to, operate within their big games.
You had mentioned that on your trip, on your annual trip, that you visit some motorcycling races on the island of Man?
Yes, I am a retired motorcycle racer, and that's the reason why I came to America, was to race motorcycles here. I got hired in the UK back in 1967, and I came out here and did very well. And, and I survived, of course. I'm still alive. And So, and, you know, my family, I had four kids then, and two of them were pretty good motorcycle riders, but one became extremely doing much better than me, and we took him to the World Championships, and we traveled for 3 seasons all over the world, and my wife Jean kept everything going here, paid the mortgage and all that stuff while we were gone, and he ended up 10th in the world.
Wow.
My story is a really fantasy story. You know, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, you know. And I was very lucky. I met the right kind of people. Of course, I performed. Fortunately, I performed well, and it just kept on coming, good things. And I was absolutely thrilled to bits to be in California, and I love the place. And it's been very kind to me. So, yeah, and by the way, I put this all in a book. I wrote a book, and it's on Amazon, and it tells the story of my efforts to get to America, and it just kind of rolls on through the whole saga. And I really wanted to just write a story for my family to know how we got here and how tough it was. And I wanted to get it done before I get too old to remember anything. So I was just reading the book last week again, and I couldn't believe all the stuff that I did, which I've already forgotten. Yeah, it's quite a story.
What is the book called?
It's called Blood, Sweat, Gypsies, and Dreams. And it's an explanation. The first page explains the title. But you can get it either through Amazon by punching in the author, David J. Scott, or the title of the book. But it was never written for profit. It was written as a record of, you know, the incredible luck that immigrants can have sometimes. And I had it. I was a very lucky guy. Very lucky.
You are planning on being at the Games this year, correct?
Yeah. My function at the Games is multiple. I'm still involved in the Caledonian Club. I am the chairman for past chiefs and widows, chiefs' widows. So I have to make sure their weekend goes well. But there are still 13 living past chiefs, and there are two widows. So I got to make sure they get everything handled, and, you know, they get VIP treatment if you're a past chief. And then, of course, my team from Erskine flies in 4 days before the Games, and we'll be in the Hall of Commerce, which I think is now Building C, and there's a big display there with lots of goodies, lots of nice things, and, you know, silly little things for a buck and nice things for $50, you know, if you want to spend money. But the three people is my chief of operations. But at the main office, I call it the mothership. At the mothership is coming with two other people, and they're going to have sole responsibility for the Hall of Commerce operation. And I'll be responsible for rounding up the sea cadets and, you know, giving them fresh buckets when they get filled and all that stuff. So I've got a lot of jobs, but it's an absolute pleasure, you know, because what I'm doing is rewarding and gratifying. So
and it truly helps a lot of people. Helps a lot of people.
Yeah.
And does the American Friends of Erskine have, is there somewhere that people could go to read about it or find out a little more if they wanted to brush up on it?
Oh yeah. Well, I don't have a website here, but there is a website for, you know, from the mothership in the UK. But I believe that they've linked me to that. Yeah, if anybody goes to, if they want to really see all about it, www.erskine.org.uk. People can mail me, you know, a check. And what we do is, and this is strictly adhered to, if I get a check, we make a thank you letter and a second letter with the tax ID number for tax purposes, because it's a non-profit and it's deductible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people will also say to me sometimes in a negative way, well, you give money and then we never hear anything. Well, not so with us. If you give us a check, you get it, it's recognized and acknowledged. And that's strictly adhered to. You know, the mothership doesn't want anybody saying that they never got recognized. So,
and that's only, that's if someone is obviously gives via a check or,
yeah,
or donates
you can't,
online.
Yeah, you can't give receipts for cash, you know, it's just not possible. But if I open up a bucket and there's a couple of checks in there, we'll have those letters out within a day or so to say thank you very much. And you know, hopefully, you know, people like, even in this house, you know, my wife, Jane, she donates to, you know, the animals, animal care, cancer research. And, you know, people are donating all the time. And they never see anything except another letter begging for more. But this one, we just send and say, thank you very much for getting in on the project. And, you know, we'll see you soon. And, of course, we are being seen. We go to, like, next week we're going to Monterey Games. And Floyd and I are going down there. And we'll have the booth. We'll put the 10x10 up. And I'll get around with the bucket. And we'll raise a few bucks. And we go from there to the first Wednesday in Pleasanton on the street fair. And, yeah, we're just going all the time. And that's the idea, is to make, well, for example, in Scotland, Erskine is a household word. It's just something that everybody grew up with. And, you know, people give their estates to it, you know, people who've got no relatives. They just donate things to it because it's so worthy. And so the plan here is to just be seen. You know, we've got no overhead. It's all a donation by me and Floyd and anybody else who wants to help. So, you know, we can go on forever. But the dream is, obviously, if we could get to be that well known that everybody who has the slightest interest in things Scottish gave us a buck, it would be an incredible effort, you know, incredible. Because there are millions of them out there, as you know.
Absolutely. Well, we hope, we've spoken with Floyd as well, and we hope, and we are pretty, well, we're confident that Outlander fans have heard the call, and with the special guest of Graham McTavish this year, that it will be, it's already one of the largest games, if not the largest games in the world, and I think adding Mr. McTavish will bring out, hopefully, the full forces of Outlander fans, and that, of course, just by sheer numbers, should increase donations.
Yeah, no, we agree. But we, the program will have a full page ad in there showing the Sea Cadets, showing the bus that we bought and a way to connect with us. And I'll be, with a remote mic, I'll be in the grandstand basically unleashing this little gang of Sea Cadets, you know, and telling people to get ready. And so there are 6,000 people in the grandstand when it's full, you know, 6,000 people.
Wow.
So I tell these cadets, you know, they're just youngsters. I kind of drill them before they get going. I say, look, don't be disappointed by people who say no, and don't be argumentative if people say, oh, I don't believe in this charity, those Wounded Warriors. I say, just keep smiling and pass the bucket. So they just, as I say, some of the guys come back and there's nothing you can tell. The bucket's got nothing in it. Other ones come back and it just jams. And it's because of that personality thing. You know, young guys and gals don't always have the sales connect, you know, that you need to make things work. But people like to see them in their uniforms, and it's in line with what we do. You know, it's a good thing.
Well, thank you so much for spending some of your valuable personal time on a weekend with us. We can't wait to share this and help spread the word about Erskine and American Friends of Erskine, and which is such a great, number one, it's a great cause, of course. But the thing that really stands out to me, as you put it, is that it's not just saying, please donate. Of course, you would like people to donate. But you have specific goals, and you have which are feasible, which have already been attained. You're on to the next one, and you can show people like 100% where their money is going and what that product is and how it helps people and will for almost a decade.
Next year, we may well switch from the bus thing because they're building some care studio type things, one bedroom things, and they're trying to find veterans who are homeless, like lying, sleeping rough in the streets and stuff, like, you know, what San Francisco's like. Well, they've got that in Scotland as well. And so they're trying to round these guys up and give them a chance to recover and come back into the mainstream. Now, if it doesn't work, well, they can go back to where they want to be. But they're going to offer them accommodation, feed them, get them well. And that's the next project I'll probably be involved in. So
nice. Well, once that's official and you have more information, just let us know. We'd love to have you come back and tell us more about that so we can help get the word out for the next set of games.
And when I see you next time, I'll give you a copy of my book.
Oh, you already did? Oh, your book. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah
I was about to say you already did, but no, you gave me the Erskine book. That was gorgeous.
Right. Good. Well, I think you'll enjoy
that. That would be... of course I would. Are you kidding me? That would be, that I'd be very thankful. Thank you so much. It's very kind.
Great. Excellent. And I'll see
you again. Thank you. Yes, we will see you in just over a month. And I can't wait because it's always good to reconnect. And again, a very, very good organization and very worthy cause where one can see quite literally where their donation is going and how it's helping people. So thank you so much, Mr. Scott.
Okay.
We'll see you very soon.
Right. See you. Bye now.
Okay. Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @outlanderpod.